And good morning, ladies and gentlemen who are joining us on the internet. Thank you for joining us here at the Bayview on the Park Hotel. My name's John Simpson and I'm the chair for this first session. We have a great day ahead of us, and I take this opportunity to thank the organising committee and all of our invited guests for their contributions and making themselves available today and in organising the event. I now want to introduce our first session and introduce Colleen Furlanetto. Colleen is here in the capacity as acting chair of the Disability Advisory Council of Victoria. But in fact, Colleen and my interaction is an entirely different environment, because Colleen, until the recent municipal elections, was the mayor of the Shire of Strathbogie, where Christine and I live. And I've had the pleasure of working and meeting Colleen through my involvement with Euroa Health, our local hospital and aged care facility. And it was terrific to have the opportunity to invite Colleen to address us today on the work of the Advisory Council. So I'd ask you to make welcome Colleen Furlanetto.
Thank you, John. Everybody can hear me? Awesome. Thank you for those kind words.
Sorry, Colleen. We were supposed to do a roll call. We'll pick it up after the first presentation. My apologies for interrupting you, Colleen, and thanks, Bridget, for telling me.
Thank you. That's fine. We'll roll call. Hopefully no one leaves in the midst of my conversation. No pressure. I'd like to, if I could, start by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today and pay my respects to their elders past, present and the future. It's an absolute thrill to be here today, and I was very pleased to get John's email and inviting me to come along representing Victorian Disability Advisory Council. I would also like to acknowledge a colleague who is... was going to be here today, but he is unable to, but he might come later. So if he comes later, say I mentioned his name, because then he'll feel important. That's Mr. Jeff McNeil. He's a colleague of mine on VDAC, and he's a great communicator and very passionate. So it's a great group that we've got. I thought it would be worth, now that Liz, if you're listening, Liz, that means I get more time at the microphone, so it's your own fault. So let's just be there. I hope you're okay, Liz. I mean that genuinely. So I just, for people information, I'm actually have a disability and I use a wheelchair. Funnily enough, that apparently that means that I need to disclose when I've in my role as mayor, I've rang and had conversations with people, and I've turned up and they've gone, oh, you're in a wheelchair, and you didn't tell me you're in a wheelchair. And I said, well, you didn't tell me you were wearing a suit. So I think that's part of a bit of a prerequisite. I think we need to have a bit of a sense of humour, us people, don't we? So I've, briefly alluded to, I've actually been a rural fourth generation, born in Paradise, so stayed there. Ruffy's my home. What still is true, but what a line that I used to like to use when I was the mayor of the Shire of Strathbogie, is to share that there were two great mayors born in our shire, Black Caviar and myself. And that will still stand, because, you know, and we've actually got her daughter being trained at the Hayes Stables, which was my father-in-law's family farm until about 20 years ago. So there's a connection, and thank you, John, again, as a ratepayer. Love your work. You've done great for us. Thank you.
I hope I paid them.
That's okay. I don't care now. I'm not there. So thank you so much for me to be here. This is my actual second term on VDAC. I was initially elected or nominated and appointed in 2013. And those 3 years did fly fast. But during that time, I was involved in local government, obviously. And some of my colleagues here from the Local Government Disability Planners Network from the MAV are here today as well. So local government is pivotal to our communities, and especially our communities with access and equity. We don't want anything better. We don't want anything more. We would just like access equal. And I think that's a message that we're slowly getting there, but more of that in a moment. The Victorian Disability Advisory Council have been asked to speak a little bit about it today. And it came about because of the Disability Act, of which I'm sure you're all aware, in 2006. But I'll talk a bit more about that as we move forward. But we're a group of people that were elected in July this year for a further 3 years. So some of us have had two terms. There's a maximum of two terms. It's sort of a bit of a Barack Obama thing. I think you're only allowed two goes, and then you have to move, which is a good thing because it keeps a bit of a succession plan coming through. So all that knowledge isn't lost in one foul swoop and brings on other fantastic members. So we're people with a disability or carers of someone with a disability, and we're asked by the Minister to share our skills and knowledge around that, offering advice to the Minister on various things. We're supported by the Secretariat from the Office of Disability, which we're quite a demanding bunch. I think that we want to, you know, be out there, be seen, and we really want to move into, especially the next 3 years, as very visible. And that's part of my reason why I felt it was imperative that I be here today, that we need to be known that we're here. And I'll explain a little bit more of our role as we go along. To be on council, you need to be have a disability or connection to a disability. And when they choose who's to go on to, I think the last, I'm not sure, but I think it was over 100 applications for 13 positions. So it's a privilege to be reappointed. And I think that trying to choose very strategically, the department and the minister tries to choose a very diverse bunch. So we will have a little bit of licorice all sorts. We've got a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I think that it brings a strength to the community as it's representing the real community of those with disability in our communities. We've got six women and five men. Yay, go the gender balance, go. We've got two people under 30. I was 30 once, a long time ago, not now. We've got three people from culturally linguistically diverse backgrounds and two that live regionally, and that's myself and Daniel Giles from Bendigo. I would just like to, if I can get the technology happening, to mention the members' names, because you may know their name, but you may not have known that they were members of VDAC. And myself as acting chair, I'm acting chair until the 1st of December. They're currently going through a process for the appointment of chair, and we'll see how that progresses over the next few weeks. John Baxter, who some of you may know, is a member. Catherine Clark, Joseph Coughlin, Melanie Eagle, Daniel Giles, Stephanie Cotlip, Anne Kavanagh, Jeffrey McNeil, Jennifer Morris, and George Taparos. So some of those names may be familiar to you. So as you can see, we are a mixed bunch, but very committed, and everybody is wanting to ensure in this next 3 years of when we're going to see the largest social policy change roll out further with the NDIS, that there's no more time that it's relevant for us to make sure that we're visible and accessible to those with a disability. A bit more about the Act. It's very important that at this point I try to explain to you, because it can be a bit of a misconception, and it is a bit hard to explain why it is so. But VDAC is not an advocacy body. VDAC is an advisory council to the minister. What's the difference in that? In a way, you know, I think the reason why it is not an advocacy body is because there are advocacy bodies out there. It is VDAC's role to strategically, to openly, without fear or favour, take on issues and or strategic thinking that we do as part of our planning process to assist the minister on various things. So, for example, the State Disability Plan, I'll talk a bit more about that a bit later because I've got a bit more time now. We do submissions, like I'm sure you do, to various reforms that come up from time to time. And one of the great, because of the resources that we had within our group, we made a wonderful submission to the autism spectrum reform. And we've had connection and to the social inclusion, to the state plan. It's really so many ways that we can, through the formal submission process, inform the minister or indeed other ministers or indeed other agencies, which could include advocacy agencies, about how and what we what they need and what we can do as a VDAC to assist in that. We speak up for the rights of people with a disability through raising awareness about those rights of persons with a disability. And we do this as this is a role of government, the three tiers of government being local, state and federal. Do you think we've got one too many there? I'll let you choose which one I think needs to go. I can say that now, I'm not a mayor. So the rights of the person with a disability, a lot of people with a disability still do not understand that they have a right. And this is not to be difficult or not to cause anyone any inconvenience, but it's about a right for you to be an active citizen, for us to be active citizens. And I look forward to the day when we don't need to be differentiating ourselves when we are mainstream and we are just people in our community. Also, we monitor the implementation of strategies. And this is going to be very, very important with the state plan. In doing the state plan, there'll be this wonderful document that comes from that, but the implementation and the outcomes that we're hoping that are going to be measurable need to be accountable too. So we're hoping that there'll be some real meaty goals set there with dates, and so that we can actually see the state plan moving forward over the next 3 years as actually achieving, not necessarily a motherhood type statement. Which there's nothing wrong with that, but we all want to see actions and we all need to put a date on things or they don't happen. And we consult and work with disability advisory committees, councils or bodies at a national, state and local government level. The VDAC that we're currently, we've only had a few meetings of the new VDAC, but we are unanimous in that we want to connect to like committees. And there are various other advisory committees. Chris is going to be speaking about his shortly. But we need to do that as well as advocacy bodies. But it is important. For example, we are with the Public Transport Victoria Advisory Committee with Chris Stewart, and the Secretariat will meet with our VDAC in December. So we're trying to, every time that we meet, we make sure that we have one or two from strategic advisory councils or groups that we, or sector of the disability community that includes the NDIS. We're having regular updates every meeting, that's a standing agenda item. And we are privileged to some cabinet and confidence information, and I think that has proven to be very well worthwhile, because we've been able to, as a group of 13, actually fling back some questions and some Dorothy Dixes, and those who have made these documents or preparing these documents find that it's very helpful. The State Disability Plan. This is not a VDAC State Disability Plan. This is a Department of Premier and Cabinet prepared document for, led by Minister Foley. It's a state government disability plan from 2017 to 2019, if I've got my right dates right there. So, but what was the role of VDAC? VDAC connects to the 79, has the potential to connect to the 79 local governments across the state. Most of those councils, they are meant to all, by definition in the Act, to have disability advisory committees. Not all do, some don't, because they don't have the resource or they're not we're needing to advocate to them that they need to be thinking about the people in their community and supporting them with their local DAC. Through the Local Government Disability Planners Network, through the MAV is where all the bunch of usually rural metro access workers and some other higher level directors attend that meeting, which is held at the MAV several times, well, half a dozen times a year. I attended one of those meetings and said that this is that we must have submissions from local government to the state disability plan, and I was asking on behalf of VDAC. And I said, because local government is a level of government closest to the people, you know what your communities need, and you're a big part of that. And I was absolutely thrilled that 50 of the 79 councils put in submissions, which is unprecedented. That had never happened before. That's because local government wants to be engaged. There were some that were, you know, magnificent manuals of everything that they need, and there were some that were very short and sharp, but they were all unanimous in what we've all become to know about the major issues for people with a disability is access and equity, transport, education, economic participation, health, etc. Go figure. They're the same things that just keep coming up. So we're starting to do that better, and we've still got a long way to go. The NDIS will be a big part of that. How am I going, John?
You've got about 3-4 minutes.
Right, gee. I've waffled fine, haven't I? Excellent. So what we want to do is we want to continue to build on that. VDAC is setting our plan, our action plan, because we thought if we're telling Minister Foley that we want him to have a plan that's got dates and's got accountability, that we ourselves as a VDAC should have a plan and should have dates of when we want things to occur as well. So we're going to be developing that over the next little while, and that will probably be done under a new chair. I will still be remaining on the committee, so I'm very excited about that, as I'm sure the others are as well. So I think that, to put it in a nutshell, the Minister wants to hear from people with a disability. You can access Minister Foley easily, no matter what your political persuasions is. I believe I've had the pleasure of having quite a bit of time speaking to Minister Foley. He gets it. He cares. He did give us a very, very important message, which I would like to share with you, and which I think Chris will pick up on as well, that he said to us at a state plan consultation that we know he gets it, but we need to ensure that the other ministers get it. There are other ministers for transport, for example, and we need to make sure that they're getting the same messages. We need to make sure that when they go back and they talk about their state budget, their state plan, in what they want to achieve in the next little while, that they're hearing the same story and they're hearing a connected and one voice. It can all be about different types of issues, but if we're aware of it and we reinforce that, that's VDAC's role, is to talk about public transport when we have that opportunity. So that's why we're becoming better informed and going to have Chris and the Secretariat come to one of our meetings so we can do that. But we need to do that, and we need to have the ear of the other ministers. Minister Foley was very clear. I get it. Help me make my other ministers get it. So I think if you could take that from today, that would be fantastic. I would also like to please let this be the beginning of a discussion between us. Whether I'm acting chair or not, I'm more than happy anytime, anywhere, to make sure that we're communicating. But that we've obviously, with the email trail as those things are, please, John, could you pass on to your committee that please contact us anytime to VAC. We're not advocacy, but we want to be informed. So that's a two-way street, and I promise that you will hear back from us as well. So that's just a very brief overview of it. I'm happy to take questions, as John mentioned, later. But thank you very much for your time, and thank you.
I'll stay at the table, Doug.
Thank you, Colleen. That's a very thought-provoking opening to our day. It gives us something really to build on, and we appreciate your comments and your offer of that dialogue. One of our key people in that regard is in the room, and that's Ricky Chaplin. Where are you, Rick?
I'm here.
Right. Rick is our Victorian-based policy and advocacy officer, and he actually has oversight of our DHHS-funded advocacy program. So he's the point person in regard to that contact, and I'm certain that he will have taken note of your invitation. So And with the national president sitting next to me, she's already going, So that's a good start. Thank you, Colleen. What I thought we'd do is hear from both Colleen and Chris, because there is, as Colleen has already indicated, a little bit of overlap and sort of commonality between what they're going to say. So we'll do that, then we'll take some questions, and then we'll take the roll call. Now, you thought that I actually made a mistake before with the roll call. I didn't. I made sure that my board colleague, Daniel Stubbs, was in the room before the... That's a blatant lie, Dan. It's a... How do I introduce someone I've known for 30-something years? Chris Stewart, of course, is a founding member of Blind Citizens Australia. He was involved right back in the very early days and, in fact, was our first executive officer. And he, after serving in that position and spending some time on our council, as it was called then, he saw the light and went to local government, and he's been... with what is now the city of Greater Dandenong. It was originally Springvale, wasn't it, Chris, that I think you went to, and that became part of the city of Greater Dandenong, where his work life involves him with disability planning and services and advocacy. But he's with us today as the chair of the Public Transport Access Committee, and I'd ask you to make Chris welcome.
Thank you, John, for that kind introduction. Yes, I do go back a little way with Blind Citizens Australia, and I'm happy to recognise the change that Blind Citizens Australia has been able to, I suppose, put in place for blind and vision impaired people, and have been very pleased to be part of that, and I thank you for the invitation today. I'd also like to thank Colleen for her presentation, because Colleen has taken quite a lot of the structural information that I was going to give you around our advisory committee, the Public Transport Access Committee, and I'll refer to it as PTAC, and I'm sorry to use acronyms, but I'll bore you if I keep saying Public Transport Access Committee. Colleen's committee, VDAC, and PTAC are very similar structurally in the Victorian state government. Our committee is focused largely on public transport, whereas VDAC has a wider view on activity. So structurally, where we were appointed in June this year, there's 11 of us, and by comparison, Colleen, there's only 3 males on our committee. We've got the gender balance right. We've been appointed by the Minister for Public Transport, Jacinta Allan, and our period of operation is for 12 months. I'll talk a little bit later about how we've hit the ground running, and we needed to, because there is a lot happening in public transport, and high-level advice to the public service and to the minister is just quite vital in terms of getting the voice of people with disabilities heard across state government. I should also take the opportunity to recognise that our two members, Deborah Simons, who's in the room with us today and a member of the PTAC. Deborah, are you with us?
Yes,
Thanks, Deborah. Deborah's been appointed, and as such, I'm really pleased to say that Deborah and I will work closely together in a similar way to the offer made by Colleen, in that if there are some systemic issues that Blind Citizens Australia would like to raise around the public transport area, Deborah and I will commit to working with you on getting those systemic issues raised at a high level. I should also identify that David Simons, a guide dog user, is also a member of the committee. So as a vision impaired person, I guess there are three of us who are on the PTAC have a lived experience of vision impairment, and so we're able to provide feedback around that area. Similarly to VDAC, the PTAC offers the minister and the relevant government departments high-level strategic advice on public transport to provide with the direction of accessible public transport, or working towards accessible public transport for all Victorians. Now, that's our broad general direction. And I'm pleased to say Minister Allen, like Minister Foley, has met with us at our first meeting and has expressed her commitment to working towards improved access for particularly people with disabilities over the life of the committee. The committee has met once in July, and at that meeting we had attending and a commitment to continue attending Ros Spence, the Parliamentary Secretary for Public Transport, and Sean Leanne from the State Government, who's the Parliamentary Secretary for Infrastructure. We've also have high-level support at our meetings in terms of the Chief Executive Officer from Public Transport Victoria, Jerome Waymer, will attend all meetings. Aaron De Rosario, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the Taxi Services Commission, will also attend all meetings. And we will have senior public servants from the from the Department of Transport attending all meetings. So what we have is a structure whereby we can provide strategic feedback to the most senior decision makers in Victoria around public transport. And I'm pleased to say that support has not only been verbal, but has been backed up. And what I'd like to talk about in just a few minutes is some of the action we've taken to date. But firstly, I should say one of the first things we did as a committee is identify four key focus areas for work for the PTAC. And just to give you the context, those four areas are firstly customer service, staffing and communication. Area two is accessible and safe infrastructure and services. Our third area of interest or key focus area is community engagement and awareness. And our fourth area is providing input to policy and programs. Now, they're broad key areas that we believe over the 12 months we can provide feedback and information and make a difference. I'd now like to move to some of the action we've been able to take in the life of the committee, which is getting on for 4 months now, and we will have our second meeting this week on the 16th of November. So we will be providing feedback to the Minister and the public service around these areas. So I'll just run through the first. One of the areas we've done some work on is the Flinders Street redevelopment project. Now, some of you may have known that $100 million has been set aside to upgrade the Flinders Street railway station. And the particular interest areas from the disability perspective are around reducing clutter in the station, improving wayfinding in the station, and also improving access to accessible toilets. Now, some work's been done certainly around the accessible toilets. There's some ongoing discussion and planning around improving access, reducing clutter. And I would encourage you over the next 2 years when these changes will be implemented to provide feedback at any opportunity provided to you. We have a representation on an ongoing customer committee that's made up of people with disabilities to provide feedback in all those areas. So let me just say that there are some very positive advancements planned for Flinders Street railway station to make it a much easier place to find your way around and less clutter. This is one of our committees, and I'll move on to our second area of information or information we've been able to provide back to the Minister, and this is around the development of a guide that the Public Transport Victoria is putting together for vertical access. Now, vertical access is about how people are going to get down into the underground stations and how they're going to get to use SkyRail, which is being rolled out. We've been able to provide initial comments on an initial draft that the Public Transport Victoria put out. Those suggestions were largely taken up. The draft document has then gone to a select group of people with disabilities that are wider than just public, than the PTAC. Their suggestions were also included in the guide, and the guide then came back to PTAC for endorsement. Now, I go through that detail because that's the sort of flow that the or the process that's been put in place to come up with a document that is going to be, at the end of the day, as user-friendly as possible for people with disabilities. Now, I don't know what that document will, where that document will the guide will end up. It's in the minister's hands at the moment, but that guide will largely direct engineers and planners when they're building the new stations. And one of the aspects of that is to provide, and I know this is important to people with a vision impairment, consistency in design. Now, John gave me a few more minutes than I thought I had today, and so I took those minutes. So I'll just finish off by just running through a couple of other very brief projects that we're working on. The state government has a policy of rolling out accessible toilets on non-staff metropolitan stations. We've been able, as a PTAC, to advise the minister that we are supportive of the program and that the design that she has, or that has been suggested, will be appropriate for people with disabilities. The department is also developing, and we've had two full meetings on, a program called Universal Access Investment Prioritisation Strategy. This is a lot of words to talk about how an attempt by the department to identify the most accessible, the most appropriate way to identify the priorities around public transport for people with disabilities. So comparing how the government will spend its money and trying to put a ruler against that to identify the best way and the most effective way to spend state government money on public transport. There is a process of refranchising happening is the next area, and we will be we have a working committee around that area. Refranchising is where the state government identifies the operators who will operate public transport for Victoria, and those operators every 7 years are required to go back to the state government and develop a contract with the state government. That process is rolling out over the next 6 months, and we have a working committee identifying how refranchising will provide some stretch targets for people with disabilities for our transport operators. John, that probably is getting towards the end of my time, although I should also say that we will be having this week at our next, our second PTAC meeting, presentations on the Public Transport Victoria compliance system, complaint system. We as a committee would like to think that we have some, we could provide some insights to Public Transport Victoria about how their complaint systems are administered. Do they take blocks of complaints and work on them to generate change within the system? So we've given ourselves that target. We'll also be having a presentation on the multipurpose taxi program review and rideshare, a major area for public transport that is with us and being rolled out. And we will also have a presentation around the Melbourne Metropolitan Rail Tunnel and how that's being rolled out, and the level crossing removal program. Now, I've just listed there, and it's easy to list these things. Our objective for these presentations is to identify, as a committee, ways we can provide feedback to the minister and the various government departments on how those programs can be inclusive of people with disabilities. Now, again, John, I've gone over time, but two things I want to just finish off by saying, and really give him a microphone and he'll never stop. Two things. One is that I encourage you as individual public transport users and I don't say make complaints, but give feedback to the system wherever you have an opportunity. Individual feedback is so vital, and let me say that it's my reading of the situation that the state government is listening, Public Transport Victoria is listening, and so your feedback is welcome. In a systemic way, I would encourage BCA to be providing systemic approaches or issues that you think are of vital importance back through our PTAC committee, and to I would encourage you to respond to any other opportunities for consultation and feedback. Thanks, John. I think I've stolen about 5 minutes, haven't I?
You know, thanks, Chris. Can I have my microphone down? Thank you for that. I'm sitting here thinking, Chris, it's a number of years since you've spoken at a BCA conference, but you've made up for it with the... Now, you thought I was going to say with the time he took. I actually was going to say with the depth of what he had to tell us. We do have a few minutes for questions, and I can see Bridget's got a microphone and Tammy's got a microphone. Now we'll take this, we'll take the questions, and then we'll do the roll call before we go I haven't forgotten it. And I can see Bill Jolly's hands up here in the centre, and we'll go to Bill first then.
Thank you. Chris, you referred to the multi-purpose taxi program and to this euphemism to avoid the elephant in the room called rideshare. So I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about the government's approach to the growth of Uber, and what this might mean for people with disabilities. It's been very popular and very effective in some countries. It's growing here, but we don't have equal access yet because the taxi subsidy doesn't apply to Uber. But the government's got to catch up, bring the laws up to date with reality, and I know there's some work towards that. Can you share a bit more information about that with us? Thanks.
Look, Bill, I'm going to duck the question because
good, mate.
I can't because, as I said in my presentation, we'll be getting a briefing at our meeting this week on ride share from the department. So in a week's time, I'll be better. I'll have greater knowledge about the direction the government is taking in this area. I do take your point that there are benefits for people with disabilities, and there are also disadvantages. And I will be, and as will PTAC, be relying on feedback from the communities, from the advocacy organisations in this area. So, look, I'm not going to... I can't give you clear indication of government policy in the area.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks, Chris.
The member
hear
does
a New
have
Horizons
a...
program coming on.
Good.
Yes. Well done. Thanks, Bill. Now, of course, I'm reminding you that questions to both Chris and to Colleen. And, Bridge, you've got someone there with a question. Can I just ask people to give their name and... and who they're directing their question to?
My question or my comment is, my name is Graham Innes, and I forgot that. And my comment, rather than a question, is to Chris and people in general. Just on the Uber issue, in New South Wales, one of the things with the rollout of Uber was that Uber Taxi was included as an option so that you could have UberX, which is the ride share, the car, or Uber Taxi. And they charge the standard taxi fares. And the government are really not very clear about whether you can use the M40 or not. But they're sort of looking the other way. So I regularly use those in New South Wales because it's a much easier way to order a taxi on, with the Uber app. And I'm getting it at the same half-fare taxi price. So that might be an option for you to put into the mix, Chris.
Thanks, Graham. Look, it's like old hometown week. It takes me back 30 years with Bill Jolly, Graham Innes and John Simpson surrounding me. It sounds like old days.
Yes.
Thanks for the feedback, Graham.
Michael?
Michael James, talking about Back to the Future. And things don't change because Bill's asking questions about taxis and I'm asking questions about trains. So. Anyway, my question or comment is really directed to Chris. It's got two parts to it. As a daily train user, I applaud the attempts to make Flinders Street more accessible. And in the context of the next part, it's really, I still find Southern Cross terrible, and I use Melbourne Central a bit and still come out in 15 different places. And I consider I have pretty good usable low vision. But that's context in terms of the Melbourne Metro project. And I know you mentioned SkyRail and trying to get in on the early stages of planning, and I applaud that. With the Melbourne Metro, we often hear with other projects, oh, we have to change infrastructure that's been there for 50 or 100 years. It's a very difficult thing to do. Given we have a brand new project, we are constantly told at how it will bring us into the, or keep us in the 21st and 21st century even. How do you believe that people with disabilities will get in on the ground in the design of Melbourne Metro? And what can we do to make sure that five different architects don't get hold of five different stations and they're completely ununiform with each other?
Thanks, Michael. Look, and I'll refer back to Colleen here. And Colleen is a colleague who's worked in local government as a mayor of a council. One of the things that, from the point of view of people with disabilities, one of the important things is to, when we're building something from a greenfield site or whether there's nothing there, that we get it right first time. There is nothing worse than going back and having to retrofit something that has been built and is new. Michael, I can't guarantee we'll get everything right first time, but I can give you the feedback that there is commitment from the Minister and Public Transport Victoria, that there is real and valuable work being done around wayfinding strategies that will be rolled out into the future. I guess commitment that infrastructure will be, if at all possible, world's best practice. And now I'm hoping, and our committee doesn't have that power to implement, but that would be the direction that our committee is working towards.
Thanks, Chris. Colleen, you want to?
Yeah, just to picking up a little bit on the Flinders Street upgrade, if I could. There's only ourselves in this room and everybody else listening on things, but we'll just keep it amongst ourselves. Just talking about the upgrade of Flinders Street, I have expressed my concern, and I'm happy to do it here, in that I was recently asked, along with members from different organisations, to attend a meeting about the upgrade. We had, you know, there was a fair bit of dialogue and it was all about the things that Chris has basically discussed. But my concern came when I said, well, I'll be reporting back to VDAC. And I was told, well, no, what happens in the room, you've got to sign a confidentiality agreement. So, you know, and I couldn't sign anything without, because I'm there representing VDAC, I'm not going to sign anything without that discussion. Now, I'm not saying this to be a stirrer or to be difficult, but I'm hoping that this committee isn't seeing having myself as a representative from one organisation and another from another, that's consulting, because it's not. Unless I can go back to my committee and talk about things, that's consultation. So if anybody had heard that that is happening, there's some great work planned, but there needs to be real consultation on it. And this is something that I copped as a mayor quite a bit. Mm. But it does need to be. I'm not prepared to sit at a seat when I can't go and talk to my colleagues about it. It just seems fruitless and perhaps ticking a box that it's been consulted on. So we've got another meeting coming up, and I think that that'll sort of jiggle its way around. But just in case you had heard that's some of the complexities that we need to work through. And, I certainly don't want to make people annoyed and then I don't get invited to anywhere. That's not what I want. But we need to make sure that we are brave enough to say, actually, if I can't go back to my individual group whom I'm representing, then this is not consultation. This is I'm sitting here in a chair being spoken to, and that's where it ends, some of it. So just clarifying for that, because there is a little bit of rumour around that. And I'm hoping that that will sort itself out at the next meeting, but because it's so important that we get it right.
Colleen, thanks for that. Thanks for the clarity around that particular instance, but you also raise what is a fundamental issue and a frustration for organisations like BCA over the years. And I'm not telling you anything new, but it's good to have it aired here. So often we're invited to contribute to these discussions, but there are embargoes around how you can actually not only inform your constituency, but learn from them. None of us have all of the answers, and none of us can be the representative of people who are blind or any other subgroup. Now we've got time for about one more question. Have we got anyone, Bridge? Or yep.
Hi, Daniel Stubbs. I guess it's a question to both Chris and Colleen. I'm not sure it's transport related, but not directly. I've moved back to Melbourne about 18 months ago, and I'm surprised how difficult it is to get the very practical issue of audible signals set up on traffic lights. So I've written to someone asking some time ago, and nothing happened, no response. And I'm just wondering if, and I know other people in this organisation have struggled with this a bit too, and I feel it's not something I should have to go to my local member of parliament or whatever to get done. It should be fairly straightforward. But I don't know if either of you have any experience or knowledge about that stuff. And also, Chris, you talked about giving feedback, nice sort of metaphor. What's the easiest way to give feedback on public transport issues? Because if it's difficult, people won't do it. Is there an easy number to call to give feedback?
Perhaps if I can start with that. Yep. One then, Colleen. Public Transport Victoria has a 1-800 number, which I'll give in a minute if people want to grab a device to take it down. There is an opportunity on that feedback number to provide verbal feedback there and then. Now, it's 1-800-800-007. Now, that's immediate. I use it myself. It's also an information line where you can get a person on the other end of the line who will, if you give them your start point and your destination, they will create a travel path for you, whether it be trams, trains, buses, country information. For example, I used it to get here this morning. Rang a person last night and they gave me three options to get from where I live in Huntingdale to here in Queen's Road. But there is the capacity on that 1-800 number. If you, I think, leave a note at Public Transport Victoria website or email, if that's more comfortable for you, please use that as an option.
If I could just add, It's absolutely relevant, the question that you raise, and you shouldn't have to go to your local member. But trust me, it helps. I know it's frustrating, but if you could feel the urge to make a phone call or to write a brief letter, I think that that would be really assistive. And obviously, if there's any, I'll leave the secretariat, or John has the secretariat, for VDAC's details and my details. You are more than welcome, while we're not advocacy, but interested in that information. Now, it's not my place to probably guess what, and I certainly don't know what is in the state disability plan, but what you have raised was raised by almost, well, all of the metro councils that put in to the submission to the state disability plan. That was one of the main things. So what would be a perfect scenario is if that is recognised in the state plan, and one of those measurable and outcomes is that it says by year dot we will have at this will be at these spots, or how much will be rolled out over the next 3 years. So have hope that that may be in there, hopefully there, because that is a measurable outcome, it is achievable, and it should be one of those things that should be just happening gradually as the budget avails. But please don't ever think it's a waste of time and frustrating for your local member. That's what they're there for.
Perhaps I could add
very quickly
as well. Each council has a traffic engineer, a senior person. I'd suggest, and I know, Daniel, it's a bit of a pain to go through that, but find your local government area that where you've got the problem. Make contact with your traffic engineer in your council to give you support. There will be a regional office of Vic Roads where a person who should take responsibility for these areas. The orientation and mobility instructor from Vision Australia should be able to help. And I know it's a pain, but if you have those four people advocating for you, it should happen fairly quickly.
Now, I'm going to take Stephen Jolly as the final question, and I would ask that both Stephen and the responses be short because we're starting to run out of time. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, John.
Radio mic. Bridget's got.
Thank you, John. I just need 30 seconds, if you don't mind, to add to Chris's information about public transport information. I want to commend to people a wonderful piece of technology called PTV Screen Reader. It's one of the smartphone apps that's available, and I find it really outstanding. If I was Trump, I'd say tremendous, for finding out timetable and travel route information on trams, buses and trains. So if you haven't played with it yet and you do use smartphone technology, get onto PTV Screen Reader. It is very good.
Thank you, and I'm going to take that as a comment. I'd like you now to join me in thanking our two presenters in this first session for being with us today and for the contribution they've made both through their presentation and in response to questions. So join me in thanking Colleen Furlanetto and Chris Stewart. So we come to the long-promised roll call. And for those who are new to BCA events, we'll bring the microphone around table by table. If you could just succinctly give me give us your name, and if you've travelled here from outside Melbourne, it would be good just to note that. And Bridge, we're starting over at the table, I think, with Michael, and then we'll work down the room. Okay, thanks.
So when facing the front, we're at the table, first row, most to the left.
Yeah. It's good to be on the left. Michael Jones.
Paula Barling from Goorum.
That's in the Shire of Strathbogie, in case you didn't know.
Christine Simpson, Euroa, Shire of Strathbogie.
Okay, Euroa.
Graham Innes from Sydney, a bit further away, and with me, not quite here yet, but will be a friend, Amir Abdi, who's seeking asylum in Australia, and please welcome him if you get the chance to the BCA community.
Thank you, Graham, and we will pick up on that later in the day if we get the opportunity.
Janine Sardou.
Jeremy Worm.
Sorry, we've changed tables. Bernadette Jolly.
Oh, that means he hasn't connected yet.
So just Gary Adler.
Kevin Murphitt.
Francois Jacobs.
Can we get closer to the microphone and keep the level up a bit,
better.
Please? Yeah.
Steve yep. Patterson.
And the table, first row in the middle.
Stephanie Mitchell from Functon, Victoria.
Bill Jolly.
Kate Begley.
Vanessa Ransley from Hobart, Tasmania.
Can you just win that microphone?
And now we're at the middle table on the other side.
Hello, everyone. David Foran.
Debbie Cook from Bendigo, but I have lived in Melbourne for many years.
Helen, is that on? Helen Freres.
Katrina Taylor from Horsham, and it's good to see that there are people that have travelled further than I have.
Lauren Hayes.
Lauren Henley, I'm the better one.
And the table front row to the right.
Stephen Jolly from Coburg in the city of Moreland.
Deborah Simons.
Biggie Jolly.
Ricky Chaplin from National Office.
Daniel Stubbs from Brunswick.
Doug McGinn from Hobart.
And John Ross Baresi from Guide Dogs Victoria.
Sorry, Bridge, we covered everyone. We might take the people over at the side, yeah.
Vaughan Bennison, also from Hobart.
Dale Simpson from Pakenham.
Bridget Tully.
Simpson from Pakenham.
Sorry, Bridget. Bridget Tully.
Tammy Simpson from Pakenham.
Emma Bennison from Hobart.
John Simpson, who you've heard already, and Colleen. And Chris Stewart are still here with us at the front table. Thank you to everyone for that. I know it takes a little bit of time, but it's great to know who's in the room. And we are also, of course, joined by a number of people through the internet stream, and a welcome to those people as well. And great to hear where people have come from, and people from various parts of Victoria, and a couple of Taswegians as well. So that's tremendous. That brings us to our next segment on the program, which is to introduce the Blind Square Internal Navigation System. And I'd like to introduce formally now Emma Bennison, who's the National President of Blind Citizens Australia, who's come across from Hobart to be with us this weekend. And Emma has made it her business to be at all of these state forums around the country. So this is the end of the run, Emma, and I'm sure that you're looking forward to that, but it's great to have you with us today. So I'm going to hand over to you, and I know you've got a guest in a remote sense to introduce to us.
Thanks, John. Hi, everybody. I want to talk to you today about, as John said, the Blind Square navigation system. And with me today via phone, we have Rob Nevin. He's one of the founders of Blind Square. Rob, can you hear me?
I can hear you just great. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. Hi, Rob. So just to give a bit of background first, and then we're going to play a short demonstration. But to give a bit of background about why BCA has become interested in Blind Square, myself and Bill Jolly were at the WBU General Assembly. That's the World Blind Union, for those who don't know, General Assembly in Orlando recently. Kevin was also there, but I'm not quite sure if he was at the Blind Square session. But there was a fantastic session which Rob gave on Blind Square, and I'd been using Blind Square for quite some time, but what I wasn't aware of was that they had developed this fantastic indoor navigation system. So Blind Square is a GPS app, which Rob will be able to tell you a lot more about when we speak to him in a minute. But the developers of Blind Square have used a technology called iBeacon technology to bring navigation to indoor settings, such as buildings and indoor shopping centres and those sorts of areas where GPS previously, of course, because you can't use GPS receivers inside, that had been impossible. So using this iBeacon technology, that's been made possible. And today, we've actually got Blind Square iBeacon technology set up in this hotel, so you'll be able to check it out for yourselves. To do that, you'll need to download the Blind Square event app, which is free for those of you here today. And I can give some more information about how to do that over morning tea if anyone wants to come and see me about that. But before we go any further, I'd like to just play a little demonstration of how the system works in Wellington. But I'll just ask Rob briefly to introduce that first before we play it. Rob?
Yeah, glad to do that. Good morning, everyone. And I'm amazed at the number of people in the room, and in particular the number of jollies, unless I'm not hearing the names correctly. It could be that Bill has some influence in that. I'm just not sure.
We'll talk about it later, Rob.
But good morning to a bright and warmer Australia than a currently dark and quite cool Canada. Thank you for the short introduction. I don't want to take time now, but rather to say that position who we are. Blind Square as a product is known. The challenges of indoor navigation are known. And what we're going to see now is a video that was prepared for the launch of a project that we started in Wellington, New Zealand. The video itself or the audio track related to it is quite self-explanatory. But you'll see comment from a few of the sponsors, from Contactio, the people in Krakow, Poland, who make the beacons, from Radio Smart Transit, a New Zealand-based company focused on improving navigation for persons who are blind, Wellington City Council, and, of course, Blind Foundation. And you'll hear from each of them in the video. We are apprentices on a journey, helping others who are apprenticing in this new technology. A journey where there are no masters, but mastery is fast becoming and now being shown. So with that as a position, Emma, if we could just go ahead with the video, then we'll go forward from there.
We're just going to actually play the audio from the video, just because we obviously want to make sure that it's accessible to everybody. And it is, as Rob said, very self-explanatory. So we'll play that
and
now.
I'm going to say who the people
are. Oh, and John's going to tell us who's speaking as well.
So the first thanks, the first voice you'll hear after the introduction is Kevin Levy, who's the CEO of the City of Wellington.
This is part of our Blind Square enabled initiative to help people who are blind or partially sighted. Around 5% of New Zealanders experience some form of visual impairment, so this is a really big step towards making the city a safe and accessible place. The Blind Square initiative will help people who are blind or partially sighted navigate their way around the CBD with confidence. They'll be able to use a Blind Square app on their Apple iPhone, which will give them spoken messages about shops, their locations, their layouts, as well as landmarks across the CBD.
With the beacons installed in businesses, I'll be able to find out where the counter is, what the name of the shop is, and so I won't go into the wrong shop. When I get in the shop, I'll be able to find my way independently. To me, it's a bit like one of our core principles and values within our own organisation is life without limits.
Radiola is passionate about Blind Square.
Brent Alberson is the managing director of Radiola.
Provision of information to people using public transport for many years in New Zealand. But this is an opportunity now to really have an inclusive approach with people with sighted disability.
Radiola has integrated iBeacon and Blind Square technology with their new soon-to-be-released
real-time transport signs to provide people with a new way to access live transport information.
If it can be announced what bus is it going to arrive at my bus stop next, I'll know which one's mine and I won't have to keep asking the people around me or ask every bus and stop them all.
It's a great initiative and will give blind people really access to a lot more information that sighted people have.
The Blind Foundation is proud to partner with Wellington City Council, Blind Square and Radiola to provide an innovative way for those in the blindness community and people with print disability to navigate Wellington City. We would also like to acknowledge the generous contribution from Contact IO, for without their support we would not have been able to undertake this initiative.
It's great to see Wellington once again leading on accessibility and technology. We see the rollout of the 200 iBeacons in the CBD as just the beginning. We want to quickly extend the network to the rest of the city and to the public transport system, so watch this space.
Supported by Ocular, Wellington City Council, Radiola, the Blind Foundation and Contact IO.
Thank you. So that's just a short overview. I actually had the opportunity to be in Wellington a few weeks ago and test out the some of the beacons in the CBD, and they really are incredibly informative. I went to the library and it, you know, told me quite a detailed lot of information about, you know, what was in front of me, you know, where the cafe was, which is always the most important thing, and, you know, how to get to the toilets and so forth. So very useful information. So now that we've heard that, we're just going to move into a short Q&A between Rob and I just to give you some more information. So Rob, can you now sort of give us a bit more information about the beacons and how they interface with Blind Square? That would be a good place to start, I think.
Yeah, glad to do that. Beacons, just by physical description, are small, flat devices, self-powered. They have batteries on board. They would easily fit within the palm of your hand. They can be affixed to a wall or a ceiling or even hid up in ceiling tiles. And while they are in place and in operation, they broadcast a low-energy Bluetooth signal, the same Bluetooth that's used on other electronic devices. So the size of that broadcast can be varied by power, but typically would be something in the range of maybe 6 to 8 meters in all directions, omnidirectional. But that can be increased up to 70 meters. But typically we would do something that would be, you know, the width of a hallway plus maybe a rectangle beyond that. When the traveler enters that beacon cloud, the device, in this case an iPhone, would recognize it, what the beacon is and the unique identifier that it's broadcasting. The beacon itself has no messaging. There are no words associated with it. It's simply a unique identifier that Blind Square then recognizes and says, aha, that unique identifier belongs to the front lobby, or that unique identifier belongs to the stairway or an elevator or a ramp or whatever the case may be. And then Blind Square kicks in without touching the device at all and would identify to the traveler first where they are. A confirmation that I am in the hotel lobby, or in the case of Wellington, that I am in the coffee shop, or that I am in the jewelers. And then from there, what are my options based on where I am right now? If you continue forward, if it's a coffee shop, you might go to the order counter. If you turn to the right, it might be seating. If you turn to the left, it may indicate where the toilets are. One key thing about this messaging is that we deliver it in two levels. And call it Tier 1 and Tier 2. Tier 1 is to provide the least amount of information necessary, as much as necessary and as little as possible. And we do that because anytime that we're speaking, we're taking away a very important resource for our friends who are blind and traveling. In the event that they need additional information, it is as simple as shaking the device, and then additional information can be conveyed. And you can see that during the demonstration of the three beacons that we have set up there. One simple example of that would be if you went to a coffee shop on a regular basis, it would be nice to know where you line up. It would be nice to know where you sit. It would be nice to know where the toilets are. But then if you've been there a dozen times before, that simple affirmation is good. But if for the first time you actually need to use the toilets, you might want to shake the device, in which case it would tell you that the men's is on the right and the women's is on the left, and then any other additional description of the interior of the restrooms or the toilets as appropriate.
Yeah,
okay, Emma.
That's really exciting, that multi-level information provision, and I've certainly experienced that. One of the other things that I think is really exciting about this technology is that it will give you, you know, information specific to the direction that you're facing. So, you know, if you're coming into a building, you get different information to what you get if you're going out of a building, which is very useful,
yes.
Particularly if, like me, you're prone to getting lost and have forgotten which way is out. We've heard about the Wellington experience, which is fantastic, but where else is this technology being adopted, Robin? For what purposes? I know there are some really exciting things happening. Tell us about those.
Well, BlindSquare as the product is in use now in 160 countries, so you would expect that the problems we're addressing with indoor navigation would apply to all, and that is correct. But we've seen some countries rise more quickly than others. We have installations throughout Europe and in Germany and Finland, in the UK, North America, here in Canada, in the US, New Zealand, and Australia now coming up quickly. That's in terms of countries. But in terms of profiles of the organizations, we have museums. We have performing arts center, universities, shopping malls, bus and transit stations, hotels, and general buildings such as the head office for CNIB in Canada, Canadian National Institute for the Blind, and of course Blind Foundation in Wellington, New Zealand. These all provide full indoor information systems. So, for example, if you can travel from the front door to exhibits in the museums, be aware of turning points, be aware of hazards or hints for navigation, such as changes in floor texture and the like. But our project in Wellington specifically set out to prove what can be done with a single beacon. One single beacon in each of the shops, whether the shop is a Starbucks or a McDonald's or a City Hall, and to provide information necessary as soon as the traveler crosses the threshold of the door. We call it illuminating the dark door with information.
Yeah, it's really interesting. In fact, the Blind Foundation have had a bit of fun with their beacons. They even tell you where the tea, coffee, and chocolate biscuits are. So it's, you know, all manner of information can be shared through this technology. What about? I recall you talking, Rob, about silent vehicles. How's that?
Ah, yes.
Working.
Thanks, Emma. I think this one is really interesting too. In the case of the go-to thought with beacons is that they are an electronic landmark that's placed at a hotel entrance or a building entrance or stairwells or elevators, as I mentioned. But our deployment of it is not limited to that. We actually have put beacons and continue to put beacons on objects that are moving. The classic example being a silent vehicle, an electric car. And what happens in that case is that there's a beacon put inside the vehicle. It's set to broadcast a signal that extends out 70 meters. And when traveling with BlindSquare, if that vehicle enters the area of the traveler, the traveler is immediately alerted to the fact that a silent vehicle is in their proximity. And then it sets about to make a clicking sound, like click, 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 something like the sound of a turn signal on a car, which is relatively slow when the vehicle is far. But as the vehicle gets closer, that clicking, the frequency of the clicking increases, like click, 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 click. So it gives you more than a slight hint as it approaches or even as it goes further away. Although this illustration relates to an electric car, it doesn't take much imagination to say, well, this would also apply to those silent utility vehicles that you see at airport locations or sometimes in downtown cores and climates that are a little more temperate than here in Canada. But we also have deployed them on buses, or we have some friends that are working with us who have it in their personal vehicles, where the gentleman may be blind in the couple, and when his wife comes and picks him up, she has a beacon on board her car, so he's alerted to her arrival.
Yeah, that's great. Just finally, how much does it cost, and what are your plans to make it available for people who don't actually use an iPhone?
The cost of the application, if you buy the application, it's $40 US, and that includes 400 credits for the new feature in version 4 that you can actually do commanding of Blind Square by voice. So, for example, if you wanted to create a personal point of interest, all you would need to do is press a button on the phone or one of the buttons on the remote control from your headset and say, and you would hear a tone indicating Blind Square is listening, and then you could just say, add, remind me about the tree branch that I keep bumping my head on, and then say 10. And then what Blind Square would do immediately is to create a point of interest based on where you are now with an alert distance of 10 meters and would literally read back using the text-to-speech voice, remind me about the low-hanging branch that I keep bumping my head on. Literally as fast as you can say it, because we're not using Siri. Siri not known for being highly accurate for translating. The engine that we're using is actually Google, which is well known for it. So that's the purchase product, and that can be used anywhere on the planet. In the areas like Wellington, or areas such as museums or universities, we provide a special version of Blind Square called Blind Square Event, exactly the same as is set up for your conference today. Typically, Blind Square Event would be the full version of Blind Square, but provided to a limited geography. So in the case of the one you have there, it's, I think, 10 kilometers around your hotel building. If you want to adventure around, you can use it fully, outdoors and indoors. But typically has an envelope of time. It'll work 10 days before the conference, 2 days before the conference and 2 days after, just to accommodate people who may want to tourist around a bit. But in the case of the permanent deployments for the beacon positioning system, we create a permanent geofence or a permanent circle where people within that circle can use Blind Square freely. So if you went to Wellington, anywhere within, I think it's a 15-kilometer area, entirely the entire city of Wellington plus some more, you can go and use Blind Square for free.
Mm. Yeah, that's fantastic. I think in Australian dollars, I think it's around 63 yes. Australian dollars. So we might need to wrap it up now, I think, but we will take questions on BCA's involvement later on in the day in terms of this topic at the end of the day when we have our Q&A. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know that the time difference has been keeping challenging. Keeping you from your dinner, that's right. But thank you so much, and we'll speak again soon.
My pleasure indeed, and I'm very, very glad. Thank you to all, and including all the Jollies, for that nice applause. I'm very happy to respond to any questions through you, Emma, through John, yes. or otherwise. So thank you for the opportunity, Rob. And nice to meet you all virtually.
Thank you.
And thanks to and thank you to Emma Dalham on the mic Colleen had. Thanks to Emma for convening that short but very interesting session. In a minute, I'll give you a little bit more information about where the beacons are in this venue. But I think we've got a couple of people who have arrived since we did the roll call. So Michael's got a microphone there. Do you want to just...
Hi, my name is Amir.
Amir, and a special welcome. Some of us had the opportunity to meet you at Bill and Carmel Jolly's house last year, and it's great to have you with us for today. Please feel free to ask questions, and both during the sessions and of any of us in the breaks and so forth, if you would like some more information. So welcome.
Thank you very, very much for inviting me here, and it's really the most pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Terrific. We got anyone else, Michael?
John, Amir is a member of BCA.
Amir is a member of BCA, Graham. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Well, hello, everybody.
Now, this is a bloke who's a new member of BCA, I don't think. How are you, Peter?
Oh, hello. How are you? Yes, it's Peter Sumner. It's very good to be back with you all again. Thank you.
Thanks, and we'll be hearing from Peter in the next session. Anyone else, Michael? Okay. Well, welcome to the two of you, and good to have you both with us.